thoughtscapes, and how by understanding wave mechanics it's possible to understand that the cell communication is actually like a symphonic sound, like of an orchestra, and that as sound waves by themselves, they are the basis of the information exchange on which the body cells act and by which they interact. And that in that way, we can understand that the thoughtscape of our body actually does exist, so that there is a spirit associated with the body, and that also means that there is a soul associated with the body, because the soul is based on the capacity to have freedom of choice and thereby to direct your life. So in that sense, the thoughtscape is the cloud of knowing that is identified with your bodily being, and the soul is the direction that you give to that cloud of knowing and to your body in your life. And I'd like to go to a different scope of that same understanding, which is the body of humanity. And in that sense, it is the foundation of social organization. In the whole understanding of human as part of humanity, we need to make a switch in thinking. Because when we're looking at the human, we realize that it is composed, every human is composed of cells. When we look at humanity, we forget that it is composed of humans. So what I'd like to do is to bluntly make the steps to the realization that as every human is composed of cells, likewise humanity is composed out of humans. So we can equally talk about the human, and as at the same time we can talk about humanity. We do not need to make a distinction between them, because they are expressions of the same principle, even though they look different. So in a sense, we are always dealing with the duality of the difference between a part and a part. So a part of means separate, and a part of means connected. So when we look at humans as separate from humanity, which is a whole model of individuality, individuation, segregation, separation, then you might have the notion that everybody is competing against each other. Well, as soon as you realize that all humans are part of the same body of humanity, then you realize that they're all striving towards the same result and could actually be helping each other. So it is simply a matter of perspective, or maybe I should call it a matter of growing up, to realize that you are born together with your mother. So being born is a process of union. It takes place in oneness, and most people die separately. You die by yourself, and that's it. It's your death, not that of others. So in that sense, the process of birth is also the dynamic of individuation, and then you grow up from baby to child to adolescent to adult. So as a baby, you're very dependent on your parents. Of course, they made sure that you got there, but they also need to make sure that you can stay there. They need to provide your food and shelter and everything necessary which basically a government says that they provide for a whole nation. And once the baby develops a bit further, they become self-standing, and at the moment that is the case, they then have their own activity, mobility, but they cannot care for themselves yet. And some social forms of organization then try to cater to those kind of needs. Then comes puberty, and at that moment, normally, naturally, at the onset of puberty, the hormones start to build up, sexuality comes into play, the boys and the girls discover that they're only half of the story, and in sexuality they discover that in their connection they complete the whole story, and it's only by the completion, by the connection between the boy and the girl, then the man and the woman, that a human can come to be. So in that sense you could say that a human can only come to be when a boy and a girl turn into a man and a woman and discover that each by themselves they are only half human, and together they form humanity, and that in their being humanity and in them representing humanity, and in a way orgasm is that transcendental level of consciousness which is associated with that, they then give the possibility for humanity to live on. So after that the cycle then continues, that they get pregnant, so the adolescent then has the baby, so while the baby needs all of the care, the adolescent gives the care. It's notable that adolescents like to go to bed late at night, which of course is ideal for caring for a baby which needs care also late at night. And then as the baby developed to a child, the adolescent has developed into an adult, and that means that while the child is able to sort of go around by itself in its environment, the adult can create for that environment. So there's a natural development of individuation from birth to puberty, but there should also be a natural development of let's call it humanization, that in puberty through sexuality the individualness is replaced by a notion of complementarity, and as a result also in adulthood of the notion of symbiosis, so that in the symbiosis the individual knows that they are still an individual, but that there are other individuals who are just as individual as they are, but that they can complement each other and thereby complete each other. And that's not by the one telling the other what to do, but quite the opposite, by each being able to do what they do best and the other being able to do what they themselves can do least. And it is in that way that you can also see that humans in humanity can complement each other, and the ideal labor service system would be that people write down what they are good at and what they like to do, but also that they write down what they do not like to do and what they are not good at, and that list is published, and that they are connected to the people who do like what they do not like to do, and the people who are good at what they're not good at doing. So that in that sense, people can automatically connect up and mutually support and help each other. and as a result discover that they complement each other. And that complementarity between people is quite the same as what we have in the complementarity of our organs in our body. Our body starts from the first cell. I'll come back to that in a bit. At the zygote, and then that zygote divides and divides again and again, and every cell division leads to a small difference between the one cell and the other cell. And those differences have been stored in the body memory called the DNA. So from earlier generations, there is a kind of recipe for unfolding the cells in forming the body. And out of that comes the differentiation of the first cell into the body organs, and all of the body organs complement each other, and in the different animal life forms there is a strong similarity that is seen between the kind of organs that they have and how these organs function. And in each case the organ has a relationship to the body but also to the environment. And in each case, the body by itself can fulfill only part of the relationship of the body to the environment. They all need to be there in order for the relationship of the body as a whole to the environment as a whole to be sustained. The origination of the differentiation of the first cell into the body organ comes out of the process of cell differentiation, which is a fractal process by which the first cell divides again and again and again and again, forming a fractal which ultimately forms the body. But that fractal process of forming the body is the complement of the fractal process by which the body was formed. So every zygote originates out of the fusion of sperm and egg. Boy meets girl, copulation, conception, and the zygote originates. So the zygote needs sperm and egg, there's a father and a mother, but the father and the mother originated from zygote, so they need a father and a mother, and they need a father and a mother, and they need a father and a mother. So when you look at your own body, which starts from the zygote, you needed a father and a mother. They each needed a father and a mother, who each needed a father and a mother. And you just go back enough generations, and you will find that there are more ancestors in your birth process than there are people on the planet. And so from the zygote, if you look the one way, you see that the zygote formed your body as a unique human being. From the zygote, if you look the other way, then you see humanity with all of the people living on Earth. So for me, that is the simplest way of showing that the human is a cell in the body of humanity, that all of the humans are connected. Because, of course, at the moment that you have more ancestors than there are people on Earth, then those people on Earth at that time are also the ancestors of everybody else who's on the Earth at this time. So, we are all family. In that sense, we are all one body. And humanity, just like the human, is one organism. The only differences is that depending on the cultural and political and religious and family conditioning that people had, that people will or will not come to understand that as humans they form humanity, yes or no. And there's a whole separate topic about the levels of politics, but in the same way that the life forms develop from cellular life to plant life to animal life to self-conscious life, of which the humans are only a part, then likewise you can see that the dictatorship is, say, based on the ideas of an individual, and the oligarchy is based on the ratio between a small group of people, say a father and a mother figure. And the democracy is based on the collaboration of a small cluster of people. And an autarky is a society in which everybody can decide for themselves what they do, when they do it, how to do it with each other, and that they will not interfere with each other in doing so. So there is a development from dictatorship to oligarchy to democracy to autarky, which parallels the development from cell to plant to animal to self-conscious life, or conscious, aware, caring life. And it's also the relation between, say, individual as the norm in a dictatorship, or a relationship in the model of the hierarchy of an oligarchy, and a group or a ring or a circle at the model of the democracy, and the network in the model of an autarky. So it matters on the kind of setting that you grow up in, to which extent you will realize that your being exists only as an individual, which is the model that is proposed by the Western capitalistic money slavery system, or if you exist as a relationship, and that kind of thing is most often in a relationship to a family, like in a mob setting, or to a church, or to a state, or to a corporation, that there is a hierarchical relationship in which you are dependent, as you find also in the oligarchic system. And the question is, can you then grow up to the next level of the democracy, where you're actually forming a group yourself? And as you can see now on Earth, there are no real democracies. I tend to call them democracies or democracies, because most of the democracies, they go into coalitions of majorities and minorities, which is a recapitulation of the oligarchy system. And in most of those democracies, they then use that hierarchy system to have somebody as the head of that system, which is a recapitulation of the dictatorship system. So those are still disempowering societies, where in a normal democracy you would have groups of people who come around the round table, the King Arthur model, and all of them can present their story, and all of them can take into account what the other is doing, but they cannot tell each other what to do, because and that's also the model of the autarky, that people as individuals have their own freedom of choice, but they also learn to have the respect and the responsibility and the reliability with respect to others. And the respect, of course, is that they will acknowledge the freedom of choice of other people. The responsibility is that they acknowledge that when they operate on a choice that they make, that they will need to have account for and care for the sequence of consequences that that causes. But they will also need to have the reliability that when they make a choice that affects others, that the others will not be adversely affected when they unmake their choices, and that they make sure that the others are safeguarded in that case. So there is a growth in awareness and a growth in reliability, growth in responsibility, in growing up from a human into humanity. And the transition that takes place is that people, as a baby, are dependent, and in that way isolated or highly individualized. Their own perspective is essentially the only perspective that they can work with, because that's the focus from which they operate. Then as children, they learn to walk around and they learn to realize that the mother has a different perspective than the father, which is different from their own, so they're able to compare perspective between their parents and learn to make up their own mind so that they can identify with one with the other, or specifically later in puberty learn to disidentify with both and learn to discover that they have their own identity. And so in puberty then they discover that their identity is their uniqueness, but that in fact everybody else is unique also, and that everybody complements each other therein. And as I mentioned, sexuality is one of the ways to discover that. And out of that then comes the realization that as everybody is individual and everybody is unique, and as everybody complements each other, that it is logical that in complementing each other we complete each other, and as humanity we can do things which as individuals in relationships in groups we cannot do. So there too there is that understanding that humanity as an organism is a conscious being, but it can only be as conscious as the individuals have grown up to realize that they are in fact humanity. In most cultures, in most educations, this development does not take place. People do not realize that there is an enormous difference in the experience of consciousness as people go through the stages from the individual into that of a relationship, into that of a group, into that of humanity. And again, the individual can be compared to the cellular level, the relationship can be compared to the plant level, the group can be compared to the organ cycle or the animal level, and humanity can be compared to the self-conscious awareness level. Those are four levels of consciousness, because when you are an individual, your choices are simple. Narcissists, psychopaths, and sociopaths, they in a way operate at that level. Like a baby, what they experience is how it is. It's simple, and they just ignore that there are others, so for them that also applies to others. It is the freedom of choice in the individual which then changes at the moment that you grow out of the isolation of your individuality into a relationship, and then discover that in interaction with another, your freedom of choice covers only half of what happens. That the other individual in the interaction also has freedom of choice, and that the relationship is actually composed of two halves. One half is, let's call it, your jurisdiction, or is contingent on your freedom of choice, and the other half operate with the freedom of choice of the other. And of course you can then have these levels of interaction that you choose not to participate, or the other chooses to not participate, or that both of you choose to participate, and only then can you have a relationship. And for that I often use the model of two castles with a drawbridge. If the drawbridges are up, none of them relates, then there will be no contact. If one of the drawbridges is down, or if the other drawbridge is down, then there will be no contact. It's only when both drawbridges are down that you can walk from the one castle to the other, or you can actually meet at the edge of the two castles, and that is when a relationship can exist. But then you can see that you only have half of the relationship, so that you are not fully conscious of the relationship. You're only half conscious of the relationship. So in relationships, the consciousness level is that of the subconscious. There is more that plays a role, more than you can account for. But you need to account for it, and that's why the consciousness doesn't deal with that, but the subconscious mind deals with that. It's like a more abstract form of identification or cognition. When in a group, you have the same, except that it's not from one person to the other, but let's say there are three persons, and then you can have a line of a relationship with the one, a line of the relationship with the other, but only half of the one line and the half of the other line is what you can deal with from your consciousness. And the other half of those two lines is your subconscious experience of that relationship. But these two people have a relationship between themselves as well, but that's totally outside of your reach. It's unconscious for you. And in the unconscious, we use a deeper level of cognition, in which abstraction plays a bigger role, and so that accounts for more unknowns. Actually, it operates a different logic. So when you're interacting with the group, you will need to be at the unconscious level. So to formulate it differently, as most people unfortunately already know, in your own experience, you can have a notion of yourself as a conscious human being. When you're relating to others, in the relationship, there are many subconscious processes which are actually part of the animal being, and many people actually will experience that those relationships operate at the animal level. When you have groups and the subconscious, the unconscious processes come into play, then that actually is being dealt with at the vegetative level. And political manipulators and churches, religions, states and cults, they know that and they abuse that. But for people to operate in groups, they themselves need to go to the vegetative level and see what happens at that level to actually be in balance with the processes that are playing there. So when you go beyond a group, a circle, say at minimum three people, into a network, which you can already represent by four people, because when you have four people, you can represent every individual by a dot, the relationship between the people by a line, and then the group of people by a triangle. But when you have four people, you will be able to see that there are four triangles which together make a tetrahedron. New shape, new complexity, and that's where the out of consciousness comes in. That's where we actually need to account for the unknown. And in the learning to work with humanity, many people go to school and they do not learn to meditate. They do not discover that in the sleep cycle we go from the conscious to the subconscious to the unconscious to the out of conscious and back again. They do not realize that there is nothing threatening about losing consciousness, because in the morning you waken up again and you refine consciousness. It's not actually that you lose consciousness, but you just shift consciousness. If you look at it in more detail, in the sleep cycle, you can see that the outer consciousness is what people associate with their experience of the world around us. The subconscious is what they experience when they close their eyes and go into a dreamy state. The unconscious is what they experience if they go into a deeper internalization and experience their emotional regurgitation of what happened before. And in their deep sleep, they in a way disconnect from everything or reconnect to the universe and are out of it, as people would say. When you look at from the cellular levels, all the way the opposite. Because in that sense, you could say that in the sleep cycle, the outer world experience, or the consciousness of the outer world, which is called the beta brainwaves, is then replaced by the dream level of the alpha brainwaves, which then goes into the deeper level of the theta brainwaves. And it then ends up at the deepest level of the out of consciousness of the delta coma brainwaves. But you could also say that the beta brainwaves are associated with the outer world, the alpha brainwaves are associated with the body, the theta brainwaves are associated with the organs, and the delta brainwaves are associated with the cells. And when you look at it from the perspective of the cells, you can see that the cells are conscious of what they do. As they form part of an organ, the relationship principle comes into play, and they are subconscious into the pooled information sharing that they have within that organ. When you look at the level of the organs in the body, forming the body, you can see that the cells in the one organ are unconscious of what happens in the other organs. And that means that they have a sensation of it, but they don't directly compute or interact with that. They take it into account, but what they do is based on their position in that organ within that larger context. And then when you look further out, then you very literally find that when you go from the cells to the organs to the body, to outside of the body, you actually go from the cell to the organ subconscious, to the body unconscious, to the out of body, out of conscious. So this relationship from conscious to subconscious to unconscious to out of conscious is what we experience in the sleep cycle, and what we experience in our relationship with others. But there is no connection between the experience of the sleep cycle, which would be called meditation, and the experience of the relationship with others, which would be called growing up in humanity. So there needs to be a kind of mirroring, that people learn to meditate, as a result of which they are aware that it's not just their outer world experience which they are conscious of, but that they become conscious of their subconscious, that they realize that when they close their eyes that there is this dream world, but that they can actually navigate and orchestrate and compose this dream world, that they can actually go into lucid dreaming, that dreaming is not a passive process, but it is the physiology of their thought digestion that they can interact with, that they can learn to interplay with. They need to learn that they cannot direct it and cannot control it, for the simple reason that that will lead to adverse repercussions. But they yet can learn to redirect it and correct it so that they do not have to repeat old mistakes. They can learn from their dreams and unlearn mistakes. And so once they've learned that at the dream level, then they can also discover that there is a deeper level, that of the organ level, which in classic antiquity was called the gods of the Olympus, or the gods of the zodiac, that these organs have different qualities, and they correspond to different relationships that we have to our environment. For example, and this is still preserved in the traditional healing technique, the heart is associated with bliss and harmony, symphony, the balance, interbalance, interplay with others. The liver is called, is associated with blocked energy, when you express more energy than can be accommodated for in the environment, the energy will bounce back, which will be accumulated as heat, which will be experienced as anger. Or one station further at the kidneys, when you express energy, but the energy disappears into the environment, you will experience that as a voidness, a cooling down, a freezing effect of a cooling associated with the sensation of fear. We go back one stage in the organ cycle, and this backward cycle goes then to the large intestine, and then you come to the principle of letting go in the large intestine. That's quite literally the case in the associated lung. It's the exhalation, losing yourself in the environment, being disconnected, like the hibernation in the winter, being lost, and the corresponding experience of apathy or depression or isolation. And when you go back one step to the next organ, then you come to the spleen, which is the level of needing to be self-contained within yourself, and therefore being able to identify with yourself only, and as a result of that, being the own seed from which you can define yourself, which you can then activate back in the heart, where you can then express that and sing your song of life in the world around you. So this is the description which is found in the Eastern, Far Eastern, Far Western forms of healing, that these organs in that way specify the kind of relationship that you can have within your environment. So when you're angry, you're trying to push things to the heart. When you're afraid, you have the notion that you're letting go of something which isn't essentially part of you. When you experience the apathy, you don't realize that actually you're the core of your own life and your own being. And once you realize that it is about your life, then you can recenter yourself and you can reset the boundaries, as a result of which the whole system turns around, and then from the heart, the song of your life goes into the liver as the spring force of creative energy, which then flows in abundance and then goes out into the kidney, and that flow then fuels the whole system, but also as enthusiasm the environment, which then goes into the large intestine and the lung, which is basically the sharing of the song with the others, but also the sharing of the shit with nature. So what you do fertilizes your whole environment, and out of that it comes down to the spleen with the self-hygiene, being able to know that you need to be yourself and others need to be themselves, so that the balance and the integrity is maintained, as a result of which the heart is fueled yet again. So depending on how you position yourself in that relationship to the environment, your organs will also have a specific different role. And the more you're in balance with what's actually going on with your environment, the better your self-image is a reflection of the world image. The more your internal relations will be in balance with the external situation, and the more the harmony and the enthusiasm will exist. And the traditional forms of healing understood this, and they also understood that when you go into meditation from the outer world through that dreamscape, where you do the dream editing, and the Australians actually call that the dream reality, and then you go back to that level of the Olympic gods, which is the qualities of the organs, then you need to negotiate with the organs and actually tune them. You say, well, Mars, you're a bit too angry instead of creative. Venus, you're prostituting instead of nurturing. And in that sense, and that's also the mystical training of the traditional Greek and Roman mystery schools, you then go into a dialogue with these inner organs, and a lot of the theater plays of the mystery plays are about that. That people would put on the mask, they personate, that's the little trumpet in the mask, that specific role, because then by performing that role they could correct something in the way they related to, say, a feeling of justice or injustice, which would be associated with Saturn and the liver. And in that way, in the meditation process, people would then learn that all of these organs have a very specific role. It can be too much or too little for each of them, and it is necessary to rebalance the relationship for all of them, and not just one at one, but all of them together as well, because they need to form a circle, and that's again the circle of King Arthur, where the whole zodiac then is able to be the carrier of the one ongoing rhythm. But that, as I said, is the third step of meditation, where you go from the outer world of consciousness to the dream world of the subconscious to the world of the unconscious organ functioning. And it's only after you've reset the balance there that you can go into the out-of-conscious level of the self-conscious, where you can actually discover that every cell in the body is the universe in inverse. And as a result, when the first cell unfolded, that the organs and your body as a whole is also a reflection of the universe in inverse, so that in fact you are the image or the counter image of the universe, formed out of the same process of creation. But then you see that only at that last level, when you're in out of conscious, at the furthest away from the conscious experience of the world around us, you then come to the inner cellular awareness. And that is where you then discover that your being originates from the cell, which in itself is self-conscious, which is self-conscious, which is universal conscious, because it's the outside inversion of the cell. The universe is the outside inversion, the cell is the inside out version. The universe turns in on itself to form the cell, and the cell turns out from itself to become universal. So that is the level of the unconscious by which we work. And once you have that, then you can realize that you are universal, but you will also realize that everybody else has that same as potentiality, as capacity, or as being. So the growing up in humanity in a way requires this going into meditation, because as you go from an individual with your own conscious, you also need to be able to operate in relationship at the level of the subconscious, I'd say the animal level, and you need to also be able to operate at groups at the vegetative level, so you need to be conscious of your unconscious. But at the level of humanity, you discover that it's the same as the level of the universe. You need to be able to go to the level of out of conscious. Most cultures do not have that training anymore. In the Western world, people basically develop up to adolescence, and then the banking system stops their development. They go into dependence or addiction or enslavement of the money system. And instead of living their own soul, they live for money, as it's described by the story of Faustus. There are a couple of countries where they are aware that that should be differently. The Swiss, for example, are aware that humans need to be sovereign. They call them sovereign, but in fact the Swiss are autonomous, that they can make their own laws. But they're not sovereign because they cannot make their own money. In fact, America was one of the few countries where they were able to make their own money and be truly sovereign. And then the bankers stepped in and sort of turned that off again. But it needs to be turned on again, because for human development, it is also necessary there is a humanity development. And then you can see that that changes the whole perspective of living as a human in humanity, because at the moment there is a political system which originally was based on the family structure, the Roman politics approached that. And then it was replaced by a village structure. So the corporate or the patrician system reflected that. Then it got to a level of a tribal system, and the religious methodology reflected that. But at the level of humanity, it is clear that everybody is a human in humanity. Everybody has the level of development, and that the only organization comes out of the realization of the role that you have within humanity. And that's not a role for you with respect to you as you would have that in individuality. It's not the role of you in interacting in a relationship, as many of the hierarchical systems operate that. It is not the role of you as a manipulator or integrant in a group, as many cults and such cultures do that. But it's the realization that as a human you are humanity, and in fact you can only function as the ambassador of humanity if you realize that everybody else is a cell in the body of humanity as well. And then you get kind of inverse political system, that people do not need political rules, they do not need a money system, for the simple reason that as humanity they will care for each other, and caring for each other replaces all political systems of laws. And as humans in humanity, they will value each other, and they will value and care for the needs of each other, and that replaces all the monetary and economical system. It will actually turn into an ecological system. So in that sense, you get what in mathematics would be called a strange attractor, or an inverse attractor, or you could say that it is the picture on the box of the puzzle that shows where the piece of the puzzle fits. So in that sense, humanity is a self-lying puzzle that will organize and face itself if humans, in interacting with each other, do not focus on, say, their picture, but on the contours of their piece of the puzzle. By seeing how they can match their contours, which for the relationship is much more important than the picture that they carry, they will then automatically discover that either their picture continues in the piece that they connect to, or it does not. And so then they will discover that yes, in their behavior, their context, they are compatible, but at their soul level, at the picture that they carry, they are not compatible. So, in that sense, by the way that they can relate, they will find people with greater affinity, compatibility. But they will also discover that it's not only that they relate to one individual, but they relate to more individuals, that there are more aspects that then of them that can be expressed, come out, and that their contour doesn't connect up to only one other puzzle piece, but it connects up to more other puzzle pieces. And that is more of their soul that is shared with other beings, and as a result, they form part of a group. And then, as a group, they discover that they're part of humanity. So the self-organization of humanity actually comes from the inverse attractor. Once people realize that we are all humanity, we all have the same needs, we all have the same problems, we all seek the same solutions, then we can immediately shift from command and control to communication and coordination. And we can immediately shift from a model of conflict to a model of complementarity and completion. And that's why this whole notion of human humanity is so interesting, because it makes the picture so simple. It just shows that everything that you already know as a human, you inherently, innately, implicitly understand for humanity. It's just that at the level of the human, it is conscious in your experience. At the level of humanity, it starts being out of conscious in your experience. And that's where normally, ideally, you would start as a baby, that you become conscious of your own individuality. And as a child, you become conscious of the interplay in relationships. And as adolescents, you become conscious of the complementarity between people. So that as adult, you can live the completion of yourself with other people. And also, and that's what most political and church system at the moment limit, that you realize that you will have to do a hygiene of what you believe, and you must be able to change what you believe and realize that your beliefs are just residues of experiences that you had, and it's by interaction with others that you will come to understand that they too had all kind of horrible experiences, and some of them they too did not resolve, but that together you can suddenly resolve those, and immediately your perspective becomes different. By dismantling beliefs, you come back to your capacity of freedom of choice. And likewise, in the interaction with others, you will discover that they too have needs, and that they, like you, may have difficulties to fulfill their own needs, but there too, by complementing each other, it's possible that you can see that the one can fulfill the needs of the other and the other way around, but that you actually need to do that in such a way that no dependence arises, and that by seeing how somebody else fulfills your needs, that you can learn to fulfill those needs yourself as well. And that as a result, organic and healthy groups of people will form, in which people are able to all of the different activities that they need to fulfill their own needs, but that they can choose to do that activity which they like to do best or are able to do best, and they might actually like to do that for others or instead of others likewise, and they might actually leave some of the activities which they like less or don't do too well yet, so that others can do that and so that they can learn from that. So at that third level there is then an interactive learning and a development of larger capacities within the individual, and that larger capacity, larger understanding comes automatically when people realize that we're all humans and humanity, and that contrary to the current popular belief, humans are not each other's enemy. Humans become each other's enemy when they believe that there's not enough food to go around, which is not true. Earth has more than enough food for everybody. Or if people believe that they don't have equal rights to whatever is available, which is not true. It's only if laws restrict free access to Earth that people can come to believe that. But from the larger perspective, Earth feeds everybody and humans can help everybody. So then suddenly the picture becomes totally the opposite. In a way you already have paradise on Earth, because the social organization then comes from the perspective of humanity as a whole, and that people are all cells in the same organism, that we inherently at the out of conscious level all have the same goal and destiny as a species, and we all are equally interdependent and dependent on the planet that we live on. So as a humanity species, we will automatically try to care best we can for the Earth for the simple reason, as the old saying has it, the Earth feeds the farmer who feeds the Earth. If humanity cares for the Earth, then the Earth will provide for all the needs of humanity. And once humanity realizes that, then the humans in humanity, in caring for Earth, will discover that they're all caring for Earth, which will then be the religion that binds them, because they all know that they are caring for their own support and survival. And as a result of trusting each other, they can also learn to trust themselves, and the result will be that on that basis of trust they can then help each other and develop each other. Of course that connects up to the understanding of freedom of choice, because that's essential in this whole story, but it also connects up to the earlier story of thoughtscapes, because once humans realize that humanity as a whole is a gestalt, that humanity as a whole is an organism, and that all of the humans in humanity actually are part of that same communication of that organism, humanity, then people can also learn to tune in to that wave band where humans connect to each other. And they will discover that it's the same as in meditation. Once you shift your environment from the outer world, go to the body environment, go from the beta brainwaves to the alpha brainwaves, and then you can discover that from the body level you can to the organ level, where you reset your relationship to the environment at the theta level of the organs, and then you can go to the delta level of the cells. But at the delta level of the cells, all of those cells connect for all of humanity, because we share the DNA, because we share the same ancestors. We are one living being, so in the DNA we already have the magic wand, the telephone tuning fork, to be able to connect to everybody else. But you can only get that tuning fork in your hand after you've gone from the beta level to the alpha level to the theta level to the delta level of meditation. So after you've learned to become conscious of the outer world, you need to become conscious of your body, which is essentially why integral healthcare is so important. And then you need to go to the level of the consciousness of the organs, which is actually where you then discover the complementarity of you and the environment, you and others, and that's where humanity comes into the picture. And then you go back to the basic level of realizing that you as a cell are the carrier of the life of the human species on Earth, and that in that sense you're an ambassador of the species there where you are. And there where you are, you can act on the behalf of humanity, which at that level of consciousness, at the delta meditation cell consciousness level, you can then actually tap into the, let's call it the mainframe computer of the consciousness of humanity, at the thoughtscape of humanity as a whole. Of course, this is old knowledge. In the past, they used to call it telepathic communication in the species. They called it God. The telepathic communication with all life forms, they called God. The telepathic awareness of other things, they called God. So it was a bit confusing and not enough specific. But once you realize that at the delta level of communication, once you learn to exist there, to be conscious while being out of conscious, then that whole platform opens, and that's where you then actually live as a human in humanity. In India they call that a god human, god being, because you can actually know according to the circumstance that you're in what would be the thing to do on the behalf of humanity, and as humanity needs to act on behalf of the Earth and the well-being of Earth, you will then also act on the behalf of well-being of Earth. That's where I associate that part with the concept of planting paradise. You will be an active paradise planter for the simple reason that as a human in humanity, you will have contact with the whole rest of humanity. You will understand that all humans are part of your own being, quite literally. But you will also understand that your being is also quite literally part of the Earth. So why would you go against that? That would not be beneficial for you, that would not be beneficial for the Earth, that would not be beneficial for another, and that would not be beneficial for humanity. So it is only logical to realize that as a human in humanity, the perspective of being one in humanity, being part of humanity, connects us all. And that's again the shift in thought, to not regard yourself as apart from humanity, but as a part of humanity. And it's that understanding of the connectedness with humanity which is part of many mystical trainings and other activities, some of the true religions and some of the deep social groups, that the foundation of what they do is that trust in, say, a meditative state of being with themselves, with each other. And so then the social organization of people is not based on laws, and certainly not based on money, but it's based on values and on appreciation, mutual respect. So that basically turns the whole picture around. And in before people can come around to live in this way, they in a way will probably need to decondition themselves from the conditioning that they got, and school education, religious education, political education, media education all tries to influence people in a different direction, not towards the one of, okay, you are a key part in humanity because you're the only one who can act on the behalf of humanity and the earth and all life forms, there where you are, also on behalf of yourself. So you always need to operate at those four levels. And that means you always need to work at those four levels of consciousness. So the key to the larger social integration is not politics or religion or economy, but it is paradoxically getting to know yourself, meditation, getting to understand that those four levels of consciousness each operate at a totally different dimension, with a totally different scope, with a totally different logic. They all complement each other, and together they span the opposites. So by combining all four, the duality becomes unity, and opposites are seen to be complements of the same. And of course, when people fight, they think that they are opposites, but when they go to the core of what they're fighting about, then they see that they're actually driven by the same. It's just that they stand on another side of it. And if they and the other would have swapped position, they would still be fighting for exactly the same, but now the opposite reason. So if you can find it, fight for the one reason, and if you can fight it for the opposite reason, then what's the fighting for? The reason is void, because the reason is based on a miscalculation on the relationship between you and the other. So once you see that you and the other are the same, because you're both humans in humanity, you both connect to humanity, then all the connectedness immediately falls in place. So that essentially is then the key to the social organization, which, as the biology shows, comes from within, not from outside. It already exists. It does not have to be invented. It has simply been covered, so it only needs to be discovered, and others cannot do that for you. You can only do it yourself.